everyone, and welcome back to the Research VR podcast. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and this is the podcast behind the science and design of virtual reality. Today, we are joined by two special guests from the Oculus Medium team. We have Jessica Zeta, who is Medium's producer.
Hello.
And David Farrell, who is the engineering manager and software engineer on the Medium team.
Hello.
Oh, cool. and of course, we have our co-host, Peter Luckoff, beaming in from Germany.
Hello from sunny, rainy Osnabrück.
Hello, everyone. So glad you guys are in here. Today, we're going to talk a lot about 3D sculpting, about using VR as a professional tool for artists in the game industry, in the film industry, and just what it means to be able to to have a creative tool in VR. So, I guess let's start a little bit with both of you guys' backgrounds. How did you find yourself in Medium, or perhaps even before that, how did you find yourself in the virtual reality industry?
I found my way in VR actually through happenstance. I was working in film and not animation or anything computer generated. It was live action film, short films, narrative, branded content, stuff like that. A lot of music videos. And a lot of them had a really big VFX slant. I was living in LA at the time, and I wanted to move back to the Bay Area where I'm from so I could be back near my parents, near my boyfriend. And I found a job as basically the assistant to the current head of experiences at Oculus. He was managing Story Studio, he's managing Medium and a few research people. I became his assistant knowing that I wanted to move into a production role. And I was really most interested in Story Studio. But when Brian Sharp and Lydia Choi came to me and basically they needed a production coordinator and I was definitely raring to go. It was like a no-brainer. It was, you know, VR in its at this point, before we had shipped Rift, before we had shipped Touch, was such an interesting realm. They were doing amazing things, experimenting with modeling. They were working hand in hand with people at Story and people that Story had known through Pixar, DreamWorks, and their games careers. And it was just like, yeah, this makes perfect sense for the next step in my producing career. Ever since, it's been a no-brainer. I love Medium.
Nice. And David?
I came from the game industry, actually. I've been working at Oculus and on Oculus Medium for almost 3 years now, actually, time flies.
So I guess before we jump into the nitty-gritty parts of Medium, how did it all start? What was the original thought and inspiration behind it, and how did it become a part of Oculus's first party set of apps?
Yeah, I believe Brian has a long career making tools for internal art pipelines and content pipelines for games, and Lydia is a technical artist. So they were both sort of in this realm where they had participated in art flows, and Lydia has been a sculptor for a decade or more, and they both participate in figure drawing and things like this. So they sort of saw VR as like this marriage of analog and digital art. They wanted to be as close as to sculpting real clay as it could have been, because you have that approachability to the material and the care for it, and you know, it's so visceral and tactile. But then you also have the digital component, which is like you have this this feedback loop that's kind of allowing you to experiment and try things and feel good about it and come back and learn more and share with your community, get comments, critiques. And so it was like this marriage of you know, what they were working in, digital art, and what they were, where their roots were in, physical art, and merging them together.
It's almost a, I don't want to say a low-hanging fruit in terms of an application for VR, but even if it is, it's not something that is easily, like, I think the idea is simple enough, but the implementation clearly is hard, because I've tried a bunch of different 3D creation tools, but all of them have different approaches. All of them have very different end results. So I guess maybe we can talk a little bit about what is Medium all about, and how do you guys position yourself for yourselves within the apps and the productivity tools that exist within VR?
And maybe also, who is it particularly for? So what would be the at least initial target group, and how did it develop?
Our focus on the current version of Medium is on sculpting and sort of organic hard surface modeling. We primarily want to drive professional usage of Medium in creation pipelines, both in film and game, both at film and game studios. That's our primary goal right now, how we want to position Medium. And we want to show how virtual reality can be used as a productivity tool and kind of show the way forward to create not just sculpting software, but other productivity packages as well. And we're focused on sculpting right now because I guess you could say it's low-hanging fruit, but there are some really obvious directions forward with that. And we feel like there's a whole family of content creation apps.
Maybe a side question. So in general, you see that Oculus has really put the bet on the mass consumer market. So, I mean, you really see that the average consumer who is not necessarily a B2B or I have a huge pipeline and I work in a big company person. So Medium kind of sticks out there a little bit, right? It's more like the most extreme, still kind of B2C B user in a sense, right? So freelancer who's still not a corporate, but it's kind of a creative person.
Right. So our focus on professionals is sort of like on a large spectrum. So it's everyone from the hopeful, aspirational, you know, get Pixar to use us. But it's also for the indie dev who's in their room, who has gotten really frustrated at using Blender and is getting confused by all the different things he has to do and just wants a one-stop shop for modeling, and he doesn't have, you know, a friend yet who can model, so he has to do it all himself, and he learns how to use Medium alongside using Unity. We're kind of at a time right now where all the tools are really accessible. There's so many tutorials online. There's such a huge community of people who will be able to help you from scripting to lighting to giving you feedback, and it's kind of aiding the creation cycle a little bit more. We're definitely different from the rest of the Oculus first party applications, which are only social or just straight up shooter games. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're sort of like one of the first big bets on what it means to be an immersive computing sort of application that comes with your Rift. Like, we're free with touch, we're free with Rift. And so though we're aiming and aspiring for big adoption through studios and stuff, we don't let that be a blocker for anyone who's trying to learn how to sculpt for the first time. One of our in-house artists, Raz, he started as a 2D concept artist, and he had never delved into 3D. And over the course of the last couple of years, he's been cranking out amazing 3D sculptures and starting paintovers and starting animations. And the progression of skill, I think, is like what we're after, trying to just make more people try art and make more people realize how important 3D models are, especially as VR becomes more important. It's kind of a big question, and so we're trying our best.
Right. In terms of professional tools that exist, I guess the question really is, if you're trying to cater to professionals that are, you know, are familiar with, say, let's say Blender or ZBrush, do you try to take cues from their UI or their from workflows and try to, you know, reintegrate them and try to port them into VR, or really try to start from the ground up in terms of thinking, like, how does a 3D creation tool, how is it supposed to work? I can think of a lot of, you know, examples with trying to port 2D apps into like an iPad or an iPhone where people realized that really doesn't really work. What's the approach like when you're trying to create a tool in someone's belt that is in a completely different medium. Let's talk a little bit about, yeah, how do we build things for this medium, specifically when you know some of your users, your higher end users are coming from an already like built out schema of how a 3D app is supposed to work for them.
Yeah, I feel like we have this conversation a lot internally, you know?
Hmm.
Like, I think we think about this a lot, especially because we all have different backgrounds. You know, there's Lydia, who's a technical artist. She's very technical. She's worked with so many different programs. And then there's me, who comes from film, who is just now starting to 3D print things and just now starting to understand what the difference is between a game engine and a renderer and things like this. I feel like how we approach Medium in terms of like a suite of tools is right now, like, or the big bulk of our development has been towards making sculpting really great and dynamic and fluid. When you're sculpting, that is your flow, that is your focus. Everything that is related to sculpting is within reach. And if you want to go any deeper, you just click a button and you have all these options available to you. With 2.0, we were really focused on making the sculpting experience remain intuitive. But then you have all the power of all the layers and lights once you go into the scene graph, once you go into scene mode. It's really tempting for us to go into specific workflows and be like, okay, a ZBrush user wants this flow. They want this control. But a Unity person wants this seamlessness between their pipeline and their like what they're trying to do with their models. And it's trying to strike a balance between all of those and also not get caught up between like, okay, well, now we're supporting this pipeline like forever. And if we break one thing, like we have to maintain it forever. There's sort of an assumption that if you're a ZBrush user or a Cinema 4D user or a Maya user, you have a certain pipeline that you're aware of. You can always bring a Medium model into Maya or ZBrush and do what you need to do with that. So we shouldn't block that. But we also shouldn't block those who are trying to use, we shouldn't overcomplicate the flow for someone who doesn't know anything about that either. And if they want to bring it into Mesh Mixer, you can, or Mesh Lab or Blender. Yeah, that's about as general as I can be with that answer, I think.
And when you mentioned that it's basically the goal is to integrate it in a sense and the pipelines that typical artists would have. So my experience, what I've been reading particularly about, like, let's say business, and I will come back in a second to the artists, is when you try to create something for a corporation, for a business, or for something that is working, the biggest problem is not to write a piece of software, not to create the tool, but actually to create APIs, ways to integrate it inside already existing stuff. And in a sense, I would argue that you rely on the open formats that you're allowing for import and export, right? FBX, whatever you support, and that is basically the gate for going in with what I have so far inside Medium and coming out of it, right? Is there some limitations you encountered, particularly between, you know, cross using different tools, or is the world just nice and every format is well supported and stuff?
We try to think of Medium as part of a pipeline, so we don't want Medium to be the kitchen sink that does absolutely everything that you'd ever need to do in 3D modeling. If that were the case, there are many more things we would need to do. And so we think of it as a part of a pipeline that solves one problem, sculpting, and then it interacts with other programs too.
But the main use case, I mean, the main way you want people to be using it is to actually create within Medium and then export out rather than, I mean, obviously we can talk about the import as well, that you can import in models, perhaps reference meshes, and then build things around it. But you're concentrating on how do you give the power to the user to build really complicated, detailed 3D sculpts.
Right. That's our focus, and that's what that's kind of the advantage of Medium, I think, is to be able to reach out with your hands and just move your arms around you to create sculpting patterns and so forth.
Maybe another question. So you mentioned a lot of artists, and when you mentioned in the beginning clay, so the first thing that comes to my mind when I think about clay is obviously an artist, but also, for example, I have VW that create clay models of the cars, or let's say I want to build a smartphone, maybe I'm also going to build first a clay model and then actually do it. Is in any sense something that you looked at where actually people do rapid prototyping or like design of objects or everyday machines or anything with Medium, or is it just really people like us or like Russ who are using it for really artistic things?
I think it's the gamut for sure. There's someone like Oz who's using it for photogrammetry. There's a few people who use it for a lot of people who use it for concepting and pre-visualization. And then there's also people who use it to make 3D printed things for around the house or for their businesses. I've seen people use Medium sculpts for using it in their guitars. I've seen people use Medium sculpts for, it's like,
that's cool.
You know, if you need to model something in 3D, which you don't need to, but when you do, you're like, okay, well, I don't have anything to do that. You know, you open up your Rift and there it is, there's your productivity tool. People will use it to make like, basically draft out, patterns for sewing clothes as well. It really runs the gamut. The precision sculpting is not as powerful as if, say, like a gravity sketch, but we're working on it as well.
I believe there's even a game that came out a month or two ago that was all their models were sculpted in Medium.
Archangel Hellfire. Yeah, they used Medium for, I believe, concept art as well, and a couple in-game models. I know, I believe, Drifter Entertainment's Gunheart also did this. There's an indie dev, yes. I forget his name, but he made a game using Medium assets as well, where you basically just throw balls at things that break. It's pretty visceral. It's pretty fun. But, but yeah.
You mentioned Gravity Sketch. It's actually an application that a lot of my colleagues use for rapid prototyping of 3D user UIs. When we like think about how to build a menu, for example, for the application. So I think that our UX people have tried multiple softwares, and for some reason they seem to prefer Gravity Sketch. I don't really know for sure why, but is it something that you also saw people doing in Medium, where they actually prototype how a VR application will look like, not just like from the model perspective of, you know, a character running around, but actually from the UI perspective?
I have not seen it from the UI perspective. I've seen it from the environment perspective. First Contact used Medium to sort of scale out how big the sort of desk space used to be. It needs to be to reach all the different like floppy disks and interactions that you have at the desk. But I have not seen it for UI. Have you, David?
No, I haven't really seen it for UI. I think we've used Medium a little bit internally to connect with each other to show some of our user interface. And, you know, it's pretty easy to just point at something in VR and say, the slider should go here, that button should go there, that kind of thing. I haven't seen specifically the use case you're talking about.
What are some challenges that come with trying to build a robust 3D modeling tool in VR? I mean, apart from the, I'm sure the performance, trying to, you know, keep the performance up, and I'm sure David, that's something you can go into. But hearing about SDF, sign distance fields, and voxels, like how do all of these terms kind of fit together to create a tool like Medium?
The performance and memory aspects of a sculpting application are really important. Those bubble up all the way to the user pretty quickly. So those are important aspects to consider. I think there's a couple of different ways to build sculpting applications. One is more polygonal based in the first place, and you're moving and dragging vertices around. And another way is a more voxel based or some distance field based approach that we use. They have their pros and cons. For sure. In our case, we really just want the experience mostly to be that you can move your hand and matter will appear or it will disappear. You can place objects down very quickly, rapidly, and they seamlessly connect to each other, and you don't have to worry about any kind of precision issues of cracking in between the polygons or something. So that's why we chose to go down the side distance field path there.
The scene graph seems, or the what do you call the menu with everything in the scene, mm-hmm. scene graph?
The scene graph with all the layers, the hierarchical right. menu with the layers.
That anyone that's familiar with Photoshop or you know I've used a 2D app in that way would be very familiar with how a tree like that would work, with each object having its own properties, its own transform, its own sub menu options and layers. And what were you trying to achieve with the new update that you released, the Oculus Medium 2.0? It's obviously a visual overhaul, as well as I'm guessing there were things that were happening under the hood as well.
One of the big limitations before Medium 2.0 was you could only have 20 layers, and that was a limitation of the 3D API we were using at the time. It was OpenGL, and we recently ported the engine to Vulkan. And that let us increase the layer limits to 100. And so once you have 100 layers, you really want some easy ways to hierarchically organize them and create and combine these layers together. So the scene graph was a big part of that, because not only did we increase the layer limit, but we couldn't just have a flat list of 100 different items. We had to do a lot of work to be able to sensibly manage up to 100 layers. And so that's where the scene graph came from. Mm. And being able to hierarchically organize your scene in VR so that you have different layers for your head, your arms, your hands and so forth, and manage resolution per layer that way is also a very core piece of Medium.
You mentioned Vulkan, and somehow I couldn't stop but think about like the new GPUs from NVIDIA and also this new Giga Ray memes and stuff. And maybe I would phrase the questions that way. In a sense, you're right now focused more on the desktop application, right? I mean, Medium is a desktop application. In a sense, when you could use something like the new RTX or whatever features of the new NVIDIA GPU processors, you could use them. How much are you thinking ahead internally to, like, you know, those standalone headsets that might come one day, which actually also have the controllers? And was this also the reason to go for Vulkan, so you actually can make your own engine that you have actually cross device platform? I don't know how to say it in your case.
Medium is although it's a desktop application, its min spec is the same as the Rift itself, which I think is a 900 series NVIDIA card and a 290 on the MPU. We really have to support both the low end and the high end. Certainly we're looking ahead to the future and looking at both the GPUs that are just around the corner, as well as the technology that's coming out.
Is there any way to run Medium on a Mac? Like, I think not, right?
Yeah, I feel like 2.0 was sort of like a really good way to reorganize the app so that if we wanted to do something in the future, whether it be engine related or introduce new tools or new modes, it would make sense from a UI standpoint and just like an architecture standpoint. We are part of Oculus, so we understand the incoming generations of hardware. And we have those conversations all the time. And I think, us being on lots of different devices is something that we think of strategically over a period of time. And I think that's all we can say about it.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. But it's awesome to kind of see media. A lot of applications that we've seen have been kind of released and perhaps supported over the next few months, but have dropped off in real updates after that. It's really awesome to see the Medium team really continuing to push on what you're trying to build, even after a year and a half.
Yeah, we have a lot of really great support from Oculus and the Rift team. When people on Rift, like, the Cornerstone Worlds team introduced new things like taking GLTF into your home and placing it anywhere. We're an obvious fit when the Facebook social VR teams want to introduce 3D posts to your newsfeed, we're a great fit. And so I think the ecosystem is starting to sort of build internally, and it's really great to see and work with all these other people who are realizing the importance of 3D and about educating most of the public about what 3D is, because it's just going to become more and more part of their lives as VR and AR become more commonplace. Right.
If you want to make, you know, a prediction or a bet that 3D is going to be a very important part of our future, whether it's for AR headsets, VR headsets, or even just displays and 3D displays, you're going to need to have an engine that you can either build things in or, you know, modify these 3D objects. And I guess that makes total sense why Oculus would want to have a internal 3D editing tool like Medium to both build, but also edit and also publish to the different platforms like your newsfeed, or even you guys now have an Oculus Home integration where whatever you are building in Medium can be integrated into your home, and when your friends visit you, they can see your creations, right?
Yeah, it's really an important part of all of that, and I think going forward in VR, if we're going to be inside of these 3D environments and working with 3D objects and so forth, being able to for anyone to be able to easily make those.
I mean, you could also come up with a super crazy scenario where, you know, the teacher in a class says, okay, now put on the headset, let's model the atoms, and in the end you 3D print the atoms and you can take them home or whatever. So, like, technically your tool is so universal, it can be applied to basically anything, right? I mean, at some point you could do, like, rough sketches of, I don't know, how the supermarket will look like or whatever. Like, any crazy things could actually fit. But I guess the most you actually try to extract knowledge from our artists, right? I mean, you mentioned Raz, and I want to do a shameless self-plug. There's an episode with Raz on the Base Stories podcast where he actually explains his backstory, that he worked for LucasArts before. And it was kind of very interesting to see how such I wouldn't come up with him as a person that would instantly fit inside a software team, but now it makes total sense. So you try to extract a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience from those really high professionals, right? You don't focus on the average user so much, but you're really trying to, in the first place, build it for professionals and then make it easy, right? This is where your UX understanding comes from.
I think we have an interesting development process for Medium, and so we incorporate ideas from all kinds of places. But one of the places we do is Raz as a full-time artist on the team. He uses Medium quite heavily, but he doesn't. He doesn't actually come from a 3D sculpting, 3D art background. And so it's been interesting to watch him develop his skills, and also watching him how people learn.
I should mention Raz, Razmig is his full name, Razmig Mavlyan. He actually was born in the same neighborhood, this tiny little neighborhood in Lebanon that I was also born in.
No way.
And yeah,
really?
in Beirut, in like a small Armenian minority neighborhood called Burj Hamoud. And like,
amazing.
He grew up there and moved to Canada, and I grew up there and moved here. And somehow
That's
we
so
like
cool.
discovered that we were both from the same tiny little place.
And you both love
yeah.
VR.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
How funny is that?
Maybe it's those beautiful moments.
What a small world.
A world apart.
How do you handle his face? How do you handle his face what? After 8 hours of, you know, everyday Oculus on? Because whenever I have a headset for like 8 hours per day, I have like those weird marks on my face. You have some secret sauce. You have like maybe some levitating drones that carries a headset with him.
Really?
I don't think anyone is literally in the headset for 8 hours straight without
okay.
a break. So you kind of take it on and off. Yeah. I think, but we try to make Medium as comfortable as possible for people to use. We try to make the Rift as comfortable as possible for Medium to use.
What's with the controllers? So recently I showed, I think, Toadbrush or any other drawing tool, I don't remember, to my girlfriend, and she was like super fascinated because she likes to draw and whatever, and was like saying, yeah, you know, but the controllers, you get maybe at some point the gorilla arm because they're heavy. She was like, yeah, have you ever drawn on a real canvas? You know, you also have to hold, in a sense, you know, the brush in your hand and actually draw on it. So how Is there a way that you're maybe experimenting or you saw somewhere where you could at least abstract a little bit from this? I have my hand and I reach into this object, because I can imagine doing it for 8 hours is a little bit tiring.
Right. So one thing about Medium is it's designed to be used sitting down as well as standing up. It's a great experience standing up, but I should say it's easy for me to forget, I think, at this point. That if you're going to be using Medium for a long time, sit down and use it. Also, you can very easily drag the whole scene to you. Just hold down the menu buttons, and that will manipulate the scene. And you can also scale up and down.
Oh.
And so what you really want to do is sit down and bring the sculpt to you. Sometimes you want to expand it to be very large and walk around it, and that's cool. But if you're going to be using it for hours creating content, you really want to sit down and bring the sculpt to you, and you kind of operate within this couple of feet right in front of you. And
I should, having been a heavy user of Medium, I have such a comfortable and ideal setup. Peter, honestly, I don't think I've ever gotten in the face marks on my face after taking off my headset. It has to do with, honestly, the straps and how well you position it. And I should mention this, that you should have most of the pressure of the headset more on your forehead rather than on your cheeks, where you can kind of pull the cheek part of the headset out so that it's most pressure is on the forehead, and then it's kind of sits very comfortably on your face. And then with Medium, I honestly almost exclusively used VR sitting down at my desk in front of my computer on my chair, and I kick my feet up on my bed next to me. I don't get the gorilla arm syndrome because I rest my elbows on the arm chair, I guess. Yeah, the rests on my arm. And yeah, I can just, I even sometimes if I'm being lazy or if it's cold in my room, I work in my bed where I'm like sitting up in my bed with my blankets over me, and I can just I move the Oculus sensors to face my bed, and I don't have to reconfigure. I don't use Guardian system or anything, and it all just works. It's actually really nice.
It's nice. It's really comfortable. Yeah. I will also say that there were a lot of, experiments about ergonomics early on, before Medium was what it was today. And I think one of the most useful things that they learned about that was how they had come from a place where they were sort of experimenting with having all your tools on an easel or a variety of tables, and then you reach over and click a setting or pick up a tool. And when you're just moving multiple feet to get something over and over, that's just such a hassle on not only your physical comfort, but also your flow. Like, you have to go do something else while you're trying to detail this one pockmark. Like, I think that the Raycast system that we have now, where everything's sort of like, you don't have to move that much, and it can, everything are very like small gestures, and we're really using full control of, or full advantage of, every single button on the touch controllers. It's sort of a product of all of that.
Yeah, just switching between all the brushes is just done with the left thumbstick. You can hold down the left trigger, go to your alt tool. You have certain windows that pop up to go into the submenus, but mostly everything is very much around your hands, and it doesn't matter which direction you're facing, you have access to everything. And it's these are the experiments, the design experiments, I think, that are shaping, you know, what is going to be, what are the most comfortable and intuitive ways. But perhaps intuitive isn't the right metric either, right? Like, if you're trying to build a first time user experience thing for a person in VR, you would choose different decisions versus trying to build a tool that you can master and you can create your own shortcuts through. I think that's that we talk about that a lot on this podcast, specifically with some of these productivity tools.
And there is also this aspect of embodiment and embeddement, and as an activism, like, basically when you think about the environment that you're shaping in the real world, let's say you want to create, a new rearrangement of the furniture in your room. If you would do it in VR while you just sit on your chair, you might not have as much of the embodiment experience as if you would actually walk around in an empty room and shape your furniture in a way. But I guess for particularly modeling and claying, it doesn't matter so much the scale of the object as actually is a, I don't know, this is the shape of it. So it's not a disadvantage, but rather an advantage that someone like us could actually lie in a bed and, you know, just sit there for hours and
create. Yeah, it's more of the relationship.
Hmm. I mean, this is why VR is awesome.
I feel like it's sort of like the relationship that you have, like, not with your virtual self, but with the model that you're sort of creating. Like, there's just, like, this innate understanding and sort of, like, co-presence that you have with a huge panther that you're making, that you've zoomed in and out and you understand what the scale is, and you've created it from, you know, and taken 10 hours to make it. Like, that feeling that you have with something that you created and are proud of and want to share out is a completely different thing than if you're just sitting on a computer switching views and like tracing different things. I think it's definitely something that I haven't thought about before, though, Peter. That's a pretty good point.
I should mention that, and this wasn't something that was apparent from the beginning, but the new Oculus Kinect 5 logo was actually designed and built in Oculus Medium, right?
I believe it was a combination of Quill as well as Medium. And I wasn't.
No, I think it was
that, so I don't know the details. I don't know how much work in post.
Yeah, I think the answer is a little disappointing. I think it's a little VFX-y.
But I mean, it was a good showcase. At least the video that I saw of using the new elastic kind of move tool to you know, sculpt something and then just stretch it across and create the shape that of the five, which is the logo for OC5. Maybe that's a good transition into this. Also, one of the bigger features that you guys were building on with the update was this move tool. I mean, from the outside, it seems like, oh, obviously I should be able to grab a part of a sculpt and stretch it. But I'm sure there's a lot more technical difficulties that come along with that.
The last year, we introduced last summer was the first time we had the move tool in Medium, and that that really opened up a lot of new possibilities. But it never felt quite right to me. The original move tool had a lot of issues anyway. So we did a couple of things with the move tool for Medium 2.0, and I called it move tool 2.0, but I don't know if anyone else on the team called that. there's two modes now. One is the default move tool, which will, as you translate and rotate the model, it will pull the sculpt along with you. But that creates matter or creates clay. And so one of the things we did with that was it's a little hard to display over audio, but with two hands, you move both your hands and kind of move and rotate and twist them around, and it will follow the curve between those hands, whereas before it would be a straight line between those hands. And so that's what you saw in the video, is that you have that nice curve right there. The second thing we did with the move tool was add a new mode called elastic move, which is a volume preserving deformation. So if you put down a piece of clay and then stretch it with elastic move, as you stretch it in one axis, it will contract in the other ones. But it's volume preserving, so it doesn't create or remove any clay. And that's really interesting, especially when you're creating organic shapes, because it helps you just create and keep the shape of objects, especially if you've created a form, say a shape, which kind of finely adjusted the elastic move works really well to keep that original shape but adjusted.
How does it work technically? I mean, it sounds like super calculation intense. I mean, how do you make it run on a 970? I mean, you basically simulate the stretching of some gummy particle stuff. Like, how does it work?
It's based on a physically based simulation, which works with which solves linear set of equations that are based on linear elasticity. In particular, there was a SIGGRAPH paper released by some researchers at Pixar from last year's SIGGRAPH, that took the equations of linear elasticity and specialized them very nicely for these kinds of efficient evaluations that we need to do on a GPU. That is a technique called Kelvinlets. And if you just Google Kelvinlets, you can read all about it. And I highly recommend the paper. It's one of my favorite C-graph papers probably ever. But the but it's a really very well-written paper for the background on how Kelvinlets work and how they would be useful in a scoping environment. So we took that research and then adapted it into Oculus Medium to work with our
Is there any other research that you have been based Medium on?
Well, a lot of our surface extraction, meaning turning the sine-distance field to a triangle mesh, is based on a lot of different information out there. I feel like some people might be interested in that. There's an algorithm called Transvoxel that we use for that, and you can also Google Transvoxel and read more about that. That's a nice way to triangulate the sine distance fields into a mesh. But it also makes it watertight, so it's always clearly inside. There's always clearly an inside and outside and perfect for 3D printing. And it also creates LOD meshes, so level detail meshes that stitch together without cracking. So it's a nice combination of things that
Maybe a very stupid question from me. What would be the difference between the approach of computer-aided design? So in CAD, you basically are doing, in a sense, those NURBS, so mathematical formulas, which shape the form, and what you just described.
Not on this podcast.
Right.
Not from
NURBS. NURBS are typically used to represent a surface and then immediately triangulate those. And so the NURBS will have different control points that are explicit X, Y, Z vertices in space and the normals that you perform and so forth. And then you create your surfaces from that. Whereas a sine distance field, what we use is more of an implicit surface where we have to find the surface in between the sample points and the distance field.
That's cool.
I think NURBS in particular work well for being very particular about your design. You want to call a wall that's exactly 90 degrees or maybe 87.
Exactly.
Something along those lines. You want a very specific curve that you want because you're making a car or something. And then sculpting, say if you're creating a face, maybe you don't really care about the exact angle, what that, those numbers are, but maybe you care much more about what the look is and how the silhouette it looks perfectly. And you want some kind of slight imperfections that you've modeled in there. And in that sense, a grid sine distance data works.
Okay. And how do voxels play a role in it? So I remember we had Skype VR once on our podcast where he explained that they built some kind of voxel engine on top of Unreal and had like some kind of D-tree saving whatever. So are you using also voxels or not?
More or less. Voxels are somewhat poorly defined. I don't think anyone has a single answer for voxels. So we often say voxels. You can think of Medium as a series of layers, whereas each layer is a voxel grid. That's a fixed size, 2048 by 2048 by 2048 voxel grid, where each voxel contains a sine distance field entry or isovalue. That's one way to think about it. So if you think of voxels as points in 3D containing data that's stored as a regular grid, then yes, you're also using voxels. Mm.
Okay, maybe the last question. Sorry, Az. Now, your engine, that means that you can have your written engine means that you can have very complex modules that you sculpture on the go, basically, and they change. Now, wouldn't that be an approach that long term would be beneficial for like game engines, where when I in Unity would actually use your approach to actually basically render stuff out, because it seems to be somewhat superior to the normal rasterization and mesh approach.
it is very memory heavy as well as processor heavy, and so you would not want to create a game with this technology. Say you had 100 of these sculpts that you wanted to render, you can render, say, one of these, but if you wanted to have 100 of these or a field of these things full, you would need to take simplification approaches. So in that case, I would say that you do all your modeling in Medium and it's exported and decimated and simplified into something that's a little more manageable at runtime, so that you can render the kinds of scenes. And, that said, there are some applications, or there are even some games that can use technology more like this. One thing that comes to mind is there was at last year's Game Developer Conference, there was a talk about a game called Claybook that actually uses very similar technology to Medium in terms of being able to manipulate sign distance, scale, and so forth. And they were doing some very clever things, so you can if you're interested in that.
The other topic that I think we should talk a little bit more about is the connection between sculpting in VR to 3D printing in the real world. That almost seems like that's like a perfect marriage of the two, because you can craft it with your hands. You can even kind of visualize specifically the size that it's going to look like, and have that intuitive sense as you're sculpting it and then being able to print it. I know you guys have been working with 3D printers, and for every live stream that you host, you also give away a 3D print. Maybe can you talk a little bit about this topic, and is that kind of an approach that you've had from the beginning to really try to make 3D printing or creating things for 3D printers a little bit better? And perhaps also sign distance fields fit into that pretty well, because you're thinking in volumes, you're thinking in either empty or filled shapes, which are, you know, important.
Right. Medium has always been developed with 3D printing in mind, and the STF technology serves that really well, because with surface represented by a sign distance, as you're saying, it's always empty and full. And so as long as you take care when you're converting that into a triangle mesh, and then also decimating the triangle mesh, on that property of the watertight mesh continues to hold. And so, right, anything that you create in Medium should be able to directly 3D print. We just export just standard 3D file formats.
Yeah, it's sort of one of those things that out of the box just works. And so we haven't stopped people from being able to do it. All of the meshes are watertight. You know, you can export really great fidelity OBJs and then open up 3D Builder, which comes on any Windows nowadays, and you convert it into an SDL or whatever format you need. Mm-hmm. We won't tell you like the principles of engineering your 3D print for best, like most efficient use of your resin or filament, but yeah, it's one of those use cases that when we look at everything, it's there. It's easy to get to as sort of a byproduct of supporting Medium as part of pipelines for lots of other things.
How did you manage to print out a model from Azad in color? So Azad have been on a show from you where he was showing how he uses Medium to basically post-process his photogrammetry scans, and he's then in the end, or I don't remember, either you had it in the hand or other, the 3D printout. How did you manage to make it so colorful?
It wasn't colored.
No?
It was monochrome.
It looked totally colorful.
He may be talking about, I think, Oz, did you win another 3D print from us another time?
I have another 3D print. I have a dinosaur head. Huh. Right? It's on my desk. Yeah, it's like with a raptor with an open mouth. But that's also white.
Okay, maybe I was having too much
color.
Well,
the technology for printing, when you print in color, which you can do with Shapeways, that's a very easy flow. You just make something in Medium, export into OBJ, upload it into Shapeways. They'll tell you if it's printable and what needs to be changed if it needs to, like overhangs need to be accounted for or walls are too thin, for example. You can print things in color. What I believe the process is that like they use clear resin and they inject it with basically like printer ink and create the color that is gotten and preserved in the color data of the sculpt itself. So, so yeah, it's it's as easy as pressing add to cart when it comes to Shapeways.
You'd hope so. I feel like we're still in the black and white phase of 3D printing, because even like higher end printers, perhaps I'm thinking like Formlabs, they're still, as far as I know, like monochrome. But for the purposes, like especially the enterprise purposes for 3D printing, I think the color is way less interest, or it matters less than being able to print really complicated shapes that would, you know, cost a lot more to do.
It feels like it also depends, like if you're making a fine sculpture of, you know, someone that you really admire, you want to do that in gray because you can kind of see the curves a lot better. It just looks better. The shadows pop a little more. But for example, if you're trying to, if you sculpted a Spitfire airplane and you print it out and you want to paint it, like that's also like something that we find people doing, basically like using like model makers, using medium to make models for huge scenes and stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask. Like, you know, instead of like putting all those totally two small parts together, I could just, you know, model my favorite train or my favorite plane and just later color it and have it.
Yeah, like a little figurine.
Yeah, you can even have nice textures. Yeah, you're going to be one of those people making little miniature models and making battlefields.
Yeah. I like to get some rest.
Yeah, it's a really big industry, actually. Yeah. If you go to Reddit r/modelmakers, it's a huge craft. It's crazy. I can't believe the things I see. There's whole subreddits just about like distressing your vintage war vehicles. It's crazy.
Have they embraced VR as kind of like perhaps a really attractive tool, but still, you know,
I don't know if they've embraced it. Like, yet, I don't think we can say embraced, but I think one of the cool things about not even VR, but like where 3D modeling or where 3D content is right now is you can hop online, go on My Mini Factory and check out scans from like the Uffizi of like really classical statues, or even like 3D scans from Sketchfab of like memorials or statues or vehicles like that, and then bring that into any 3D program and print that yourself and then do what you want with that. Like, I feel like if you can't make it, you can scan it, and that technology is really easy. And like from there, you can mix and match and do a lot of different things.
You know what I find highly fascinating? It just occurred to my head, like it seems like what defines medium is this combination of unimaginably complex mathematical IP. Like, you really created something that is well running, and like it is so like complex and uses new materials. But on the other hand, you're communicating about it and talking about it in a totally understandable way for any artist. It's like a very unique approach. I mean, usually people either do some really complex technology stuff, or they, you know, do something really beautiful and nice. But the combination of it seems to be something that is going through everything that we have been discussing today, right? What do you think, guys?
Yeah, I think these are just necessary steps that need to happen for us to be moving into this kind of spatial computing realm. And the tools that are being built now are like kind of like looking like early Photoshop and early you know, Final Cut or Premiere. Like, these are the real essential creative tools that people use for the next 10 to 20 years, or even early MS Paint, right? Like, these are the things also that as a child, when you're growing up, you're experimenting with these tools. I remember playing with paint for so long.
Oh, yes, me too.
And this is way easier, right? To do things with your hand and with a touch controller, it's so much easier.
I feel like once you put on, you know, not even just VR, but you put on medium, and then you realize what like 3D art is. It's like, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, we were like, what are computer graphics artists? Like, what is this like pixel and what are you doing with it? And now we're like, this is a voxel, it's a 3D pixel. You know, VR artists are becoming more of a thing and are gaining a lot of traction around the world and are, you know, able to sustain themselves. Yeah. Like this is a completely new sort of schema that we haven't really that we're just discovering. I think that's one of the cool things and the challenges of working with Medium, where it's like you're trying to solve for what needs to be done today. You know, the people who are working on film and games and movie and content, but then you're also trying to solve for the thing in the future, which is this world that is just beginning to be like created.
Yeah, it's really a shame that there is not. I mean, it's not a shame. It's basically something that we have to live with. But in a sense, there haven't been a mass adoption of VR yet. I mean, there have been, but there hasn't been yet.
For good reason, right? Yeah.
For good reason, in a sense. But I mean, when we think about the episode we had of Museum of Other Realities, I mean, I sometimes sneak in and just look at this art. I mean, this has been art created by artists with basically just VR tools, different tools. Sure, you could do some sculpturing in mediums and put it in NMVR or, I don't know, do then something in ToolBrush and add it to it. And in the end, you have like a beautiful thing that you created and you put it in a virtual museum. And like, it's so beyond what the everyday life of a normal artist is, but it's so approachable. You just get a Vive, you get a PC and you have it. Like, there is literally, when you think about the price of a decent MacBook, like a VR setup that is way more powerful and enables you to do all the stuff is way less than a tool that usually an artist has. So the entry barrier should be lower. So my question would be, how do you, maybe not even advertise, how do you evangelize for this technology? So I guess through the live streams you do, but is there any other activities you do to try to engage the artist to try it out and see how simple it is?
Perhaps the class that you guys are also hosting for Oculus
Medium.
Medium
is a bunch of developers, but we're also a bunch of marketing events, biz dev people. Kelly Townley, Naomi Kornman, they sort of run our marketing biz dev events. And we sort of did it from the ground up. It was one of those things where we literally started by sending artists computers, teaching them how to run the bat files to pair touch controllers with your Rift, and then like having a 50-page Word document with everything that could go wrong, how to fix it, how to use Medium. And starting from there, it was a lot of the first, it was the internal network that we had. It was, you know, Lydia and her sculpting teacher, or Brian and some of his games friends, and then they would refer other people, and then they would refer other people, and it sort of became this collective brain of people sharing tips, sharing tricks, sharing their sculpts and their progress. And we didn't expect that right away, but once it started happening, we started capitalizing on it. We kind of created like this community of people who share their work on Facebook or have Slack channels dedicated to kind of like talking about these things, and have Discord servers and stuff. And I think we supplement this by going to different events, showing people how to use Medium, kind of like, I don't want to say collecting influencers, that sounds weird, but just making friends with a lot of artists that we agree with, like Oz, like Steve Teeple, like Len Southern, people who see where VR is going and see eye to eye with us about how important getting people to learn about 3D is, and just enabling them to speak on more about Medium and sculpting. We do a lot of workshops. We're doing workshops at Trojan Horse Was a Unicorn, which is one of the big artist events. Our next step is sort of more about like educating professional artists about how to use Medium so that they can sort of evangelize it within their studios, and then sort of trying to make VR the place where we can teach people about using Medium, enabling that sort of like real-time education for how to sculpt. And I think Medium is the perfect vehicle for this, because one, like, you know, once you get the art bug and you want to get better, that's like such a satisfying feeling. But it's also one of the few applications where, you know, you're not trying to memorize shortcuts and learn the software and get better at art. You know, you can really focus on just getting better at art, and then everything else kind of falls away.
Awesome. Just to wrap things up, guys, how can people find out more about Oculus Medium, perhaps more about these classes as well? And how can people find you specifically, perhaps on Twitter or other places that you post some of your work?
So you can find Oculus Medium online at oculus.com/medium. That will take you to a few different places, one of which is our forums. Hit us up on our forums. We help triage bugs. We help triage crashes. We have like a really cool community of people who are sharing their sculpts all the time and giving encouragement to newbies. We also have Facebook groups that are public. Virtual Sculpting is one. Oculus Medium Artists, type it in. Be amazed at the sheer skill of the people doing these things. Twitter.com/Oculus Medium, Instagram.com/Oculus Medium, Facebook.com/Oculus Medium. We do a lot of our updates about upcoming classes and releases on the forums and our Facebook page. So if you were to only pick like one or two of those resources, go to those. And you can, I only have a Facebook page. I don't have a Twitter or an Instagram. I like to keep off the grid.
That's fine.
Lucky you. Lucky you.
Cool. And David?
Yeah, everything that Jay-Z just said are really, really great resources and everything I would have put on. I am personally on Twitter at Nosferlatu, which is Nosferlatu. I've just been on Nosferlatu. And I tweet about various technical issues and a little bit about Oculus Medium and a little bit about this and that, but
nice. I have to say, you guys' Facebook page, I think the group is awesome. Lots of people posting their work, really high quality things to get inspired from and get ideas. I've seen a lot of posts that I've wanted to then recreate, or at least try to understand some of how they did. So that's always really helpful, especially at the scale of VR that we're in. You know, you need to be inspired by other people's work to get ideas of what can be done. And I'm sure even you guys, you know, there's things that you've probably seen that you didn't know were fully possible. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I think I think the Facebook groups for Oculus Medium really do have a lot of inspiration for the team. And we all watch those really regularly because the amount of work and the quality of work that comes out of those is pretty amazing. And it also helps us understand how Medium is being used and what people are doing with it.
Right. Awesome. Thank you, Oculus Medium. Thank you, Jessica and David, for joining us here today. Thank you, Peter, for beaming up from Germany. Thank you all for listening. You can find my live stream with the Oculus Medium team both on their YouTube page and also on their Facebook page. It's a fun hour-long stream where I talk about photogrammetry and Medium. So that if you want to see me in the flesh and not just my voice, you can see us there. I think, Jay-Z, you're in it as well. And yeah, thank you all for listening. You know where our Twitter and our pages are. If you can leave us, our Discord page is down below as well. Both of you actually are invited to join our Discord community, where you can connect with some of our previous guests and our listeners. It's a pretty awesome audience of developers and designers where we just talk about these topics before and after podcasts. And yeah, thank you all for being here again. Please leave us a review on our podcast page on iTunes. It would be incredible and awesome. And
thanks,
we'll see
guys.
You guys next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Wait, don't run away.
Okay.